Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Maria Dudzak, and I am joined in the studio by Sue Medel. And also, Sue Doherty is back with us. They and several other people are raising funds for AIDS research in something called Life Cycle. We'll hear more about that. But I'm going to start things off with Sue Medel, who's with Public Health, and some information about HIV and AIDS. And I guess I should also say what prompted having you come in and talk about this is I understand you did a presentation for Rotary giving a lot of facts and info about HIV and AIDS.
Mm-hmm, I did. As part of our team, our AIDS Life Cycle team, we were invited to present at Rotary to talk about our upcoming bicycle ride to raise awareness about HIV and AIDS. And so as part of the talk, I thought it would be important to talk about U.S. statistics, worldwide statistics, and statistics in Alaska as well.
And it seems as though there isn't, you know, certainly in the 80s, it was constantly in the news, and even for many years, constantly in the news, but you really don't hear about HIV and AIDS as much. And is that making people maybe a little more passive about protecting themselves?
Probably would be my guess, because it's not in the forefront so much anymore. You know, before, like in the height of the epidemic, right, was in the early 80s, and people would, because it was at the forefront of the media, and it was this quote, you know, this quote unquote killing disease. Now that we have long time survivors, people who are infected with HIV but can survive for a long time. So it's not necessarily a death knell like in the past that it was.
And explain the different what HIV is and what AIDS is. I think a lot of people misunderstand that.
Sure. So HIV stands for human immunodeficiency virus, and AIDS stands for acquired immune deficiency syndrome. You have to be infected with HIV to get AIDS. And the disease of AIDS does not manifest itself until you've been infected with HIV, typically for 8 to 10 years. Many people are infected with HIV, don't know they have it. And that is one of the reasons probably why it spreads, because people aren't taking protective measures. They don't know they're infected.
So one should get tested periodically.
Yeah, the recommendation actually is, depending upon your lifestyle, the recommendation is to get tested annually.
And explain the I guess, risk factors.
The risk factors are unprotected sex, so having sex without a condom. Risky behaviors that lead to that are like poor choices as far as using alcohol and drugs. So that can lead to risky behaviors as well. So it's a preventable disease, very preventable. And how we talk about it in the schools and with clients that come to the health center for, you know, screening is the use of condoms. 100%.
And I know intravenous drug users was a big thing in the 80s. Is that being found to also be considerable risk in the sense, or have, I guess in that way, have people learned? Or
IV drug use is still a big way to transmit the disease. There are needle exchange programs, you know, that are in very urban areas. Certainly we don't have that here.
And speak about, I guess, some of the statistics. What are we seeing worldwide? What are we seeing? How does our nation, I guess, compare? And how does Alaska compare? Just some of those facts.
Mm-hmm, sure. So in the world, according to the World Health Organization, since the beginning of the epidemic in like 1981, 78 million people have been infected with HIV and 39 million people have died. In 2013, worldwide, according to WHO, or the World Health Organization, 3.5 million are living with HIV/AIDS worldwide, and 1.5 million have died. Some of the other worldwide statistics that I think are pretty impressive are about half of new HIV infections are among those under 25 years of age. And according to WHO, AIDS is the second leading cause of death in adolescents. So those are worldwide stats. And then so the countries that are most affected, the first country is Africa. And then they account for like 71% of the people living with HIV. And then second in place are the Americas, South and North America, and number three is Europe for rates of HIV and AIDS. And then in the United States, according to the Centers for Disease Control or the CDC, there's 50,000 new cases of HIV infection per year. 1.2 million are living with HIV that are 13 years of age and up, and almost 1 in 7 are unaware that they are infected with HIV. And overall in the United States, 658,000 people have died. Alaska is ranked 45th in the number of states, if we start, you know, at number one, which currently is Florida, followed by New York, Texas, California, and then Alaska is 45th out of our 50 states.
And do you know if that's per capita or if it's number of cases?
That is...
Because we do have a small population.
We have a very... that is a good question.
Sorry to put you on the spot there, but
It doesn't make a huge, makes a big difference if it's rates. I believe it's the number of people that are infected. Mm-hmm. That's how it's, because there is a difference between the number of people infected and then the rate of infection. Alaska has a really low rate of infection. We're like 3.3 per 100,000 people versus like I think New York. What is it? I think I wrote it down. I don't know. It might be, I don't want to say what it might be. I'll find it and then I'll tell you in a minute. Where is New York? Oh, sorry. I don't have New York.
That's okay.
Okay. The Northeast, I guess, is 14.2. That's what it is. 14.2 per 100,000 of new AIDS diagnoses versus us, which we're only 3.3 per 100,000.
Yeah. Is there, within Alaska, do you know if they're, what do you say, it's like in more urban areas, rural areas, does that make a difference?
Yes, definitely. Even everywhere, urban areas definitely have the highest rates of new HIV infection and probably the number of people that are living with AIDS because that's where they can find services.
Okay.
That are readily available.
And I just let folks know this is a call-in show. We may not be able to answer, all your questions, but if you have some questions, you can give us a call here, 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. Can you speak about, I guess, as a public health nurse and meeting people, telling people their diagnosis, working with them, are there misunderstandings, I guess, about HIV and AIDS that are out there? Are you finding that people maybe think they're immune because of XYZ or something? Are there certain things that maybe people are not correct about and should be aware of? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It does make sense. I think the knowledge base is out there. It's just people, depending upon your, some of it just depends upon your age, right? You know, adolescent risk factors, their prefrontal cortex of their brain isn't fully developed. And that's the area where we make our logical decision making. And that's not fully developed until you're 26 years of age. And so it makes sense. It's unfortunate, but it makes sense that some of the higher rates of HIV are in adolescents because they are choosing to have riskier behaviors because they don't know the consequences sometimes, or they don't make the logical decision about the consequences of their behavior. And again, that's like the big time where people are experimenting with drugs and alcohol. And so they may think like, okay, I'm going to be safe. But then in the meantime, they've used drugs and alcohol and then it impacts their choice making.
And probably also this belief that the person they're with saying, oh, no, I don't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have anything. I'm clean.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah, they just don't worry about it. And, you know, when you're that age, too, you just think you're invincible. But also in the older population, in like the 50, 60-year-olds, HIV rates are increasing because they also sort of think like, well, we're all so old. Nothing's going to happen to us either. Nobody has that. But they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something definitely to think about. Mm-hmm. Speak about the public health, and I guess, is that where people would go to get testing?
Yes, the Ketchikan Public Health Center and public health centers across Alaska offer confidential testing for HIV. And we don't deny services if you can't afford to pay. So there is a fee associated with it, but it's a sliding scale fee. And yep, we test people, we draw your blood, we send it off to the state labs. It takes about 3 weeks to get the test results back. And then we just go from there, depending upon test results. Southeast has a very low rate. Like we're like 7% of our population across all of Southeast has been diagnosed with HIV. Anchorage has the highest rate, Anchorage Matsu, followed by the interior Fairbanks, and then Southeast. So we're the third in the state as far as rates go.
But as you mentioned, 1 in 7 don't know that they're living
correct
with it. And then a lot of people aren't getting tested.
Right. And so these are just diagnosed cases that have been diagnosed in the state of Alaska. Right?
And when, at this point, there are lots of, I guess, treatments now. I mean, like you said before, in the 80s, it was pretty much a death sentence. And now there's the people that are surviving. What are, kind of treatment-wise, what do people do?
Well, it's incredibly expensive. They take highly active antiretroviral therapy, and the meds can cost anywhere to like $10,000 to $15,000 a year. And people have to be able to have access to those medications. They have to be able to continually take those medications. So they have to usually have accesses to social services that can provide some wraparound care for them that enable them to be able to purchase the medicines. So AZT was like the very first drug that was introduced in the 80s, and that was the only antiretroviral drug. And then initially when it was given to people with AIDS, it was given in such toxic levels that people were dying from the drug treatment. Gradually, they figured out what the therapeutic doses were. And since then, I don't know, there's like 35 different kinds of drugs out there now that they can treat AIDS with. But it's incredibly expensive, like I said. Not everybody has access to it, particularly if you're talking worldwide in Africa, those people don't really have access to the medication that we do here in America. There's new meds out there now that if you are living with an HIV positive person and you are not HIV positive, you can take PEP drugs, and PEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. And those are meds to prevent HIV for people living with an HIV positive partner. And they have to take one med a day and follow up with their doc like every 3 months. And then if you've been exposed to somebody, and you know you were exposed, so post-exposure prophylactics. So let's say a healthcare worker, you know, with a needle stick, or you had unprotected sex with somebody that you know was HIV positive. There's a medication now that you have to start taking within 72 hours of a possible exposure. And you take that med for 4 weeks, and it's not intended for long-term use. So those are new. That's new, fairly new.
And if someone is, I guess, concerned, they, you know, maybe it's been years since they've had unprotected sex, how often should you be tested? You mentioned it's like an 8-year incubation period, so to speak, or something like that.
Yeah, so you should come in. I mean, if you think you've had unprotected sex or you're not sure or whatever, you should come in probably within 4 weeks or whatever to get tested after that. And then we have a window period. So oftentimes we'll have people come back in 6 months after their last risky behavior. And then after 6 months, if your blood test results came back negative, and then you're practicing safe sex or choosing not to use IV drugs anymore, then you really don't need to come back if it's been 6 months.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And again, if anyone has questions, we have a few minutes left. 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And we are talking about HIV/AIDS, but let's just also mention other sexually transmitted diseases that probably you're seeing more cases of that at
sure.
the public health. What are things people should be concerned about?
Well, in our town, chlamydia, we have the highest rates of chlamydia in Alaska. Like we're usually number
our
one.
Our town?
Yes.
Wow.
We are usually number one or number two. So that is a big one that we test for. And that is very simple to test for. It's just a urine test. All you have to do is come in and
and are there symptoms
with chlamydia? Chlamydia can be asymptomatic. So another reason, you know, just kind of like HIV, you can have it and not know you have it. Chlamydia is treatable, though. It's a bacterial infection, and so it can be treated with antibiotics that we have at the health center.
And you said it's the largest rate of it here, roughly.
In Ketchikan.
Percentage or how many cases? Unknown. Okay.
Yeah, I don't really know.
We're the high.
But we're usually one or number two in the state. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Also, Sue Medell and Susan Doherty, you are a part of a group that is fundraising for, I understand, AIDS research. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. We're a team and of five. We're all participating in what's called AIDS life cycle, Ride to End AIDS. And so, yeah, each one of us has to raise a minimum of $3,000 to do the ride. And yeah, it's raise money for treatment and awareness and services for folks living with AIDS and to build ambassadors, because, like we've been talking, that it's kind of gone away from the forefront, and to say that this is really still a big deal worldwide and in the United States.
How did you learn about this cause? What drew you to it?
Well, my sister, who lives in Southern California, had some friends that had done the ride for a few years, and she just called me one day and said, "Hey, Sue, I've got a fun idea for you and your crazy Alaskan friends, something to participate in." And so I just threw it out there one morning on a run to Sue Doherty, and then next thing we knew, we were signed up.
Yeah,
a team.
She's learned not to give me any crazy ideas. So she brought up this idea, and thought about it for a while, and then I said, okay, I'm going to sign up. Sue has ridden bikes all of her life, but mostly mountain bikes. So she, you know, for her to jump in, she had to purchase a bike. She's learning how to ride with, you know, clip-on pedals. It was a big jump for her to go, I'm going to ride 545 miles in 7 days on this skinny, tired little bike on the road next to cars. I mean, there's all these things that if you haven't been a road biker, are little challenges along the way. So, she threw the idea out there and thought it was a great cause, and
took off from there. We recruited people.
You mentioned that you each have to earn or raise $3,000 for the cause, and then otherwise you are paying all your expenses to get there and do everything?
Airfare, and, you know, people don't really think about it, but you have to transport your bike, so you have to have a bike box. You know, a bike box, a minimum is like $300 for a bike box, and how, you know, who would have a bike box? I have one because I've traveled with my bike, but the rest of the team all had to purchase bike boxes. You know, people are...
Gear.
The gear, and, you know, we have one person who's self-employed, so she's not going to be working for 10 days, so... You know, it all adds up to your personal expenses to do the ride, the time and the gear and the commitment to raise the funds. But I think we all believe that it's a worthy cause, and that it's gone on so long. And, you know, how do we get it to the next step where it's not so many people aren't dying?
And I understand you also have a fundraiser coming up, and all of those monies gathered will go toward this?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're having a dance on Saturday night at the Crow's Nest. The doors open at 7 o'clock. There's a $15 cover charge. And, yeah, you can come dance the night away and contribute to our charity ride.
Yeah, we'll have live music for at least 3 hours, and it's like Sue said, it's up at the Crow's Nest. We'll also have some auction items. We'll have a couple of live auctions, and then we'll have some silent auction items. And to give you an example of one, there's three of us that have paddle boards, so one of the auction items is going to be paddle boarding for 2 hours on your choice of a sunny day. So we'll have some things like that that are services that we are donating. We have different expertise among our group. We have a master swimmer who will offer some swim instruction and things like that. So,
yeah, mention who the other team members are.
So we have Chad and Rebecca Lawler, who are with us here with the Coast Guard, and we have the pleasure of having them in our community for at least another year, and we're not thinking about when they have to move. We have to move on. And then Elizabeth Einset and Sue Medell and myself. Team of five.
You also mentioned that a big part of this is to raise awareness and keep people aware of what's going on. How does the ride do that? I mean, are you stopping in towns doing something? Are there events along the way? Or how is that awareness getting raised? Or just the fact that who are all these bikers out there, cyclists?
Well, each town, so we stop in seven different places, and it's like a moving city. We're set up in parks for the most part and have tents, and there's a tent for food. There's a tent for shower. Every person has a two-person tent that you get at the end of the day, and you have to put it up, and that's where you sleep. And when you leave for the next morning's ride, you give it back to the roadies, and they actually, you know, have it in big, huge vans, and they move to the next place. So you have 3,500 people all in a town, and then they're on the road moving to the next town, and they set up. And so visibly, it's all these people on the road and being in the communities. And there's one stretch that they ask everyone to wear red because we're on the coast and we're winding around, and you can see it snake around, and you just see this red ribbon, they call it, that is really a visible cue that, you know, we're all out here, you know, doing our part to try to raise funds and awareness and build ambassadors. I mean, I think that's what we really need, is more ambassadors to help, you know, kind of like one of the reasons we went to Rotary was the 30-year commitment that they had to eradicate polio and the effect that their organization has, because it's three-tiered and goes from a local club to an international to the foundation level, that they're able to partner and really make a difference. So I think, I mean, for me, I think that's mm-hmm. where I think we might have the most potential, is to get some high-powered ambassadors that have a little more influence than I personally do.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much for being here. Anything else you wanted to add?
I think just the hope that we've seen, like the progress of AIDS when it first started, it was kind of like in the early 50s or something, where like childhood leukemia was kind of like a death knell also. And now like 9 out of 10 cases of childhood leukemia are being cured. And so the hope is that all the research is going to keep marching along, and that someday there will be a cure for AIDS.
Okay. And when is this bike ride, by the way? When does it start?
It starts May 31st through June 6th.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Again, thanks so much, and good luck on your quest.
Thank you, Maria.
Sue Doherty, Sue Medell.